seagull. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk, episode 375, to be broadcast on December 13th, 2023, on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you're watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment and excuse the previous part of this. We should be able to respond. Actually, I might be able to respond. We're going to leave it at that because Fran is not here today. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and are listening on Facebook Live, you can comment on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page, or you can email me at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's Rant of the Week. We need a revolution, and I'm not talking about just spinning your wheels. Yeah, you know, revolution. Yeah, it's kind of a joke. Yeah, you know, it's time to get out there and get a little bit more active. There was a great, great article in, not this past Sunday, but the Sunday before, Hartford Current, all about roundabouts. You know, the revolution, it's starting, all right? There's little glimpses of the revolution around. And now it's time to really get out there and get active. We're going to talk a little bit more about that on the show today and how and why to start a bicycle, a delivery bicycle revolution. Kind of interesting, huh? Yeah, well, it all makes a lot more sense. Anyway, this and more in the show. Positive side, roundabout might be coming to a Connecticut intersection near you. Why it's a transportation evolution. Also revolution. Anyway, we'll get to that too. It's very interesting what's going on there. Talk to you more about it in the show. Cyclocross national results. Local New Englanders shine. We got three national championships out of this last Cyclocross Nationals. Three, count them. One, two, three. A couple of them were with my near and dear to my heart older friends, and then we had one from good old Lizzie. So anyway, we'll talk a little bit more about that as we get into the show, and watch out, Amsterdam proclaims Santa Monica Mayor Gleam Davis. We are going to be the bike capital of the world. Well, good luck with that one, but we'll see. We'll see. We'll talk a little bit more about that in the show. And shout out the Bicycle Revolution and Harvey Mudd College. Yeah, Harvey Mudd College, professor of political science and environmental policy, Paul Steinberg, has developed a unique course conducted entirely on wheels. Students in the Bicycle Revolution ride bicycles through the Los Angeles region to explore the challenges of creating bicycle-friendly cities. Along the way, they meet with decision-makers, transportation planners, and community activists and gain a window into the politics of social change in an urban setting. That is kind of interesting, and I've got a Forbes magazine excerpt from that, and I think it's really interesting, and there's also a video that goes along with that, which I'm going to also explore and see what's going on there. This and more in the show. Mechanical Minute and Bicycling and Cycling Tips. All right, this is just going to be a shorty, real shorty, because Franny and I are headed to, right here, Venice, Florida. Yeah, we're heading down to Venice on Wednesday morning afternoon, and we're going to go hang out with Franny's mom, because Franny's mom's having some surgery done. That's why Fran's not here today, by the way. She is at work so that she can get all the patients in that she can before we leave, and then, you know, we'll be able to travel, and she'll feel a little bit more comfortable about that. So, anyway, no Fran today because Fran's working, because Fran's trying to get all caught up on work before we leave and go to sunny Florida. We hope it's going to be sunny. We hope it's going to be warm, and we hope it's going to be non-eventful or uneventful, I guess would be the word. You never know in Florida. Florida's a funny place. I'll probably have a few words to say about it when we get back. Or maybe, just maybe, not sure if I'm going to be able to pull this off yet or not, we might be able to broadcast from Florida next week. So stay tuned on that one. Not real sure exactly how that's going to work out, and I will let you know. Okay, so Mechanical Minute and Cycling Tips is, do I bring my bike with me when I go to another place? Well, you can bring your bike, and of course there are options as to how to get it there. There is always the bicycle carrier that you bring to the airlines, and they look at you like you're from Mars, and then they charge you like you're from Wall Street, and you know, they just, it's not a great way to travel. If you have to travel with your bike, yeah, you can do it. You can do it. But it is a very costly venture. Shout out to the airlines for not charging other sport type things like golf and skiing and such exorbitant fees like they do bicycles, although that may have changed over the last few years. But should you do that, here's my suggestion to you. If you're going to an area that has a bike shop or a bicycle rental place of some sort, rent the bike when you're there. Definitely worth it to rent the bike. By the time you get done renting the bike, you would have transported your bike back and forth. And yeah, I know it's not your bike, but you can bring your pedals, you can bring your shoes, you can even bring your saddle if that's near and dear to you and you need to make sure that you're in, you know, the ultimate comfort. You can do things that will definitely work for you if you just rent the bike. Or if you're fortunate, like Fran and I are, we have over the years come across some bicycles. Fran bought a nice used road bike down there when she was down there one time. She had brought her old road bike down, and then so the initial trip down was a one way, and then she had that bike waiting for her, but then she stumbled into the local bike shop and they had a killer deal on a bought it for my significant other, and thinking that they were going to get, you know, excited about cycling. God, how many times? I saw this a lot in my bike shop. So you've got a passion for cycling. I agree. You know, it's a great thing. You get a passion for cycling. You love to ride your bike. And when you get home, you've got somebody tapping their foot. And the person who's tapping their foot is, you know, they're impatient because you're out riding your bike. And all you can think of is, I love doing this so, so incredibly much. Why don't I just get my significant other involved in cycling? And then he or she will get it and they'll understand. And then, you know, this problem will be solved of the impatience at home, right? Great idea, isn't it? Bad idea. Anyway, for any number of reasons, but you know, we'll just start out with the basics, and that is, so you have a passion for cycling and you decide that you're going to buy your mate a new bicycle as a big surprise. This is one of those times of year that people do big surprises. Careful. Anyway, you decide to go and buy your mate the bicycle that you love so much. And it might just be like that road bike that you're just having so much fun on because that's what you love to ride. Or maybe it's that mountain bike that you have also fallen in love with and you just can't get enough. Maybe it's your cyclocross bike. Maybe it's your dirt bike or gravel bike. Maybe it's whatever. Maybe you get lucky and it's your e-bike and then they actually get turned on to it. But that's another story. So anyway, you go out and you buy them the bike that you are absolutely in love with. So what did this guy do? He bought his wife or girlfriend or whatever a really nice racing bike. A nice racing bike. That's not the way to start out there, dude. You know what that ends up turning into? Bike for sale. Yeah, that's exactly what it was. And he had brought it down to the local bike shop. They had a killer deal on it because the guy just wanted to get some money back on it. And Franny took it out for a ride. And it was funny because, you know, when she went in to take a look at it, they said, well, you can take it out and take a spin around the parking lot and all that. And she goes, no, I want to take it for a ride because, you know, Fran rides. So she went out and rode it for an hour and then came back and said, yep, okay, I'll buy this. And so she bought the bike. So now she has an even nicer bike than what she had from her old road bike, which was not such a nice bike. But anyway, now she's up to date and all, everything's looking real good. And it's a sweet bike. It's a sweet ride. So anyway, she's all set with that. And we keep that bike at her mom's. And then I have her dad's old bike, which was an old steel Bianchi bike. And I did a few things to it and kind of fixed it up and got it working. And, you know, I don't need anything fancy down there because it is flat, 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 like really flat. The biggest hills there are the bridges, the overpasses. So that doesn't require me to have much more than, quite honestly, I could just do it on a single speed. And that may be in my future down there. I might take that bike, which has horizontal dropouts, and I can make it into a single speed, and it'll be even nicer. But anyway, I don't care. It works for me. So anyway, that's what I have for a bike down there. And so we both have bikes waiting for us. So the only thing we really need to do is to get down there, put some air on the tires, and go for a bike ride. And that is my cycling tip. And that is, make sure you have a good pump there. And try to make sure that your mother-in-law doesn't give it away. Long story. Problem is minorly solved at this point, but anyway, we have a way of putting air in our tires. But long story. Anyway, moving on, and good morning to Billy and good morning to Mark. Nice to see you guys out there today. Like I said, I can't respond real well here because I don't have Franny with me today, but nice to see you. So we're going to get now into the show because my bicycle tip was to make sure you have a pump. And also, you know, the rental thing versus the transport thing and all that. So let's talk about those national championships. The National Cyclocross Championships were in Louisville, Kentucky this past week. I have been talking about it on the show a lot, and now I have some results. And the results are, big shout out to all the Connecticut and New England racers. Pretty cool stuff. From the kids from the Connecticut Cycling Advancement Program that all went down. We had a lot of little juniors go down there. Little juniors. Some of them are big. Some are bigger than me. But anyway, they went down. So we had those guys. And big shout out to Brian Wolf and CCAP for being down there with them and for them. If you go to the CCAP Facebook page, he did video interviews of a lot of the kids. It's pretty cool. So definitely check that out and like that. And, you know, give Brian a shout out. He's doing a good job over there. So give him a yell. And then we go on to the rest of the story. And all this time, I'm trying to get somebody to send me up a video or something of the course, and nobody can really get that to me. And, you know, understood, they're real strict about keeping the course open only when the designated times are. So a lot of people didn't really have a chance to do much of a, you know, lap on the course before getting out and racing. One of them being our friend Dave Rustico, who's from the Plantsville, New Britain area. I don't know if I got that. I think I might got that town wrong there, Dave, but no big deal. But actually, it'll be show up right here. Yeah, okay. So anyway, he was in the men's 65 to 69 race, and he was second at Mansfield Hollow this year, because Dave comes out to Mansfield Hollow every year, and that's really cool. And he was also, I think he actually came out in one of the practice sessions too, so he got kind of a chance to play around with it. So there were 34 masters aged 65 to 69, and that was on the second day of the event. The field was tightly packed for a majority of their five-lap race. After the first lap, a lead group of five riders emerged, including Scott Paisley, from Charlottesville, Virginia, Dave Rustico from Plantsville, Connecticut, Chris Southern from Frederick, Maryland, Jay Trojan from Cumberland, Rhode Island, and Brad Young from Porter's Corner, New York. And with two laps to within two laps, the lead whittled down to three riders, Rustico, Southern, and Trojan. Three played cat and mouse for the remainder of the race, in which each took a lead position throughout. As they approached the finish line, the final time, Rustico and Trojan duked it out, and Rusty won the race. So Rusty's got another national championship jersey. Very cool. He has an incredibly cool post on his Facebook site, which is talking about how he was going to get himself through the race, because he's had a lot of things going on personally, and you know, it's this was a big race for him. So Rusty, cool deal. So psyched for you. It's really, really cool. And I'm sure that, you know, we'll hear more once you get back. So, yeah, Dave Rustico of Plantsville, Connecticut is your 65-69 national champion. And we have a lot more to talk about here, because there's more in the list of New England riders here. We're going to go to Frank Jennings, who's from Edgartown, Massachusetts, and he was first in the 70-74 range. Okay, so we got that. And Lizzie Gonzalez, who we have talked about numerous times on the show, and Lizzie is, she is basically from Ashland, Massachusetts. I don't know if I got the town right, but somewhere around that area. Correct me if I'm wrong here on this one, and especially if Mark is listening, her father. Anyway, I can say I knew you when, Lizzie. Okay. Lizzie was second in the collegiate women's varsity race. Okay. And down 9 seconds on that one. So second place and third place in the collegiate varsity relay. And she goes to Marion University. Yeah, Marion University. And so, and then came the U23 race for the women. And good old Lizzie, yeah, she did it. She pulled it off. She got the big win. So I am going to just talk about this just a little bit. That's the U23 is the women's under 23 title. And there's a great picture of her on Cycling News if you're interested in seeing that. And there's also some Facebook posts out there. And there is a very, very, very proud father who is, he's cavelling about his daughter and the big ride that she had. So, anyway, this was a four-rider lead group, and Ella Brenneman and Cassidy Hickey took the silver medal, but Lizzie got it by 17 seconds. I don't know if I have the full details on this race. Let's see if they have it listed here. I do not believe they do, unfortunately. But I don't have a complete breakdown on this. It might be on the Cycling USA site, actually. It's probably here, and I will have to go dig for it. But anyway, great news. Good job, Lizzie. Really, really cool. I think it's just awesome that you got that. We've got, let's see, I had another one. Steve Toplitz, 75-79 from Leverett, Massachusetts. There's another one for you. So another New England rider. And there's more, I know, because I've seen them. Karen Pertil, who comes out from Narragansett, Rhode Island, to race in my Masters Women race every year. And she was third overall in the women's 65-69. So Newbury, Mass. Michelle Sartowski from Newbury, Mass. Was second place in the women's 60-64. And, of course, we go back to that, to the Dave Rustico win, and Jay Trojan is from Cumberland, Rhode Island. So again, here we go. We had lots of really, really, really good results from New England. And I think there was one other person too, and I'm missing out on it. I don't have all of the results here, unfortunately, which would have been nice, but they didn't print them all. Let's see if I got it on another page here. See if we can get lucky. Here we go. That's the Lizzie page. Nope. We're going to move over to this one right here. And we'll see if we can get some more. Nope. That's all I got. That's all I got for you, folks. And until, of course, we get into the overall results, which are not showing right now. Come on back here. And that is in the women's elite race. It was Clara Hossinger again. Yeah. Clara just keeps winning and winning. I watched that race. Fortunately, I have a subscription to Flow Bikes and was able to watch the race, which was kind of cool because it was really, really a fun thing. Yeah, New England does rock, Billy. You're absolutely right. I agree. I totally agree. And so anyway, Clara basically rode away with it. It wasn't too much competition for her. She seemed to handle it all fairly well. It makes sense only because of the fact that she has been dominating for not only in the national, but also she's starting to ride really well in the international scene too. So she spends a lot of time not here, and that helps a whole lot. So, and I was right about the Lizzie being from Ashland, Massachusetts. So, and she went hard from the start. I just found the information, making an early gap for herself. The battle for the rest of the podium spots was between Laura Zoner and Ella Burneman and Cassidy Hickey. And as it was a strategic race of attrition as riders tested the muddy course and planned their pit stops accordingly. Riders pitted more than most did in the few days in the past few days because the conditions had worsened. Lizzie continued to ride a flawless race, won her first U23 national title. Brenneman was the strongest out of the group and excelled to a silver medal in front of Hickey for third. So Lizzie said she had confidence going into today's race, saying it was a really, really phenomenal day. The whole week, I was able to race collegiate for Marion after pre-riding yesterday and seeing the rain in the forecast. I just kind of woke up with the feeling of knowing today was going to be that day, my day, and it was just going to, and I was just going to try to remain as present as possible. I wanted everyone in to race my race today, and I didn't want to have any risks. I wanted to make sure I was staying smooth, steady, and really just absorbing all the energy around me. So, hey, you know, shout out, Lizzie. You raced in New England. You grew up in New England. You came to my race when you were a little junior, and you know, you ride in the ugly stuff that we have here. We've got the roots, we've got the rocks, we've got the mud, we've got all of the interesting conditions. And your skills are, and you started when you were just a little kid. And so, you know, your skills are great. You deserve it. You raced well. You rode well. Very, very cool thing. So anyway, we're excited. We're all excited here. And okay, back to the women's elite. Katie Klaus was second. She was playing around a little bit with Clara, but eventually she got a lot of distance there. So, and third place was Raylan Nuss. And so that's kind of what happened there. Eric Bruner. Yeah. Eric Bruner, wow, what a race. The men's race was really, really interesting because it was back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. Bruner and Strohmeyer were back and forth with each other the whole way. It was one was in the lead, then the other was in the lead. It was a great, great race. Really, really fun to watch. And Scott Funston hung in there for third place, so he did well also. Anyway, it's just a really, really fun nationals. Really, really fun to watch. And yay, maybe he'll come to Hartford again soon. Never know. It's been there twice now. We'd love to have you back, USA Cycling. You should come back. Come back and play in Hartford and Riverfront Park, and we'll see what we can do for you. So that's basically it in the national cyclocross scene. Oh, Jack Spranger was also the U23 men's winner, too. So anyway, that's it. That's it for USA Cycling. That's it for cyclocross here in the U.S. Now it's all going over to Europe, and then we'll just have to watch all the fun stuff over in Europe and see what's going on there. The season is really kind of just starting over there. So that's soon to be talked about. We'll see a little bit more about it. So I want to bring up this little article that was in the Hartford Courant a couple of weekends ago, and it was stated here, a roundabout might be coming to a Connecticut intersection near you. Why? It's a transportation evolution. So this was by Tom Condon, who writes for the Connecticut Mirror, it says here. You take a look at, well, this is a classic right here. The intersection of Route 82 and 85 in Salem, sometimes called Four Corners, used to have a lot of crashes. Many of them were serious. Now it doesn't. The reason is because they put in a big old roundabout. And it's really cool because I had not known that for a long time. It was always a traffic light there. And then I had to come back through that way when I was helping with the Thread City Quiet Corner ride this year. I was running SAG for them and mechanical support. And I came back that way and it was like all of a sudden, hey, there's no traffic light here anymore. Check this out. It's a big, wide circle. It's a big, wide roundabout. It's very, very cool. And, you know, it's just the flow of traffic is, it's really well designed, and the flow of traffic, it's really, really clean and smooth, and, you know, no one's really stopping because people have learned actually how to use the roundabout. That's another fun thing, and I've talked about that before on the show. If you ever want to, you know, get some good entertainment, go to wherever they put in a brand new roundabout and just watch the learning curve, we'll call it the learning curve. That's a kind way of putting it, right? Yeah, it's a little dicey with people who just don't understand that you don't really stop when you get to a roundabout. Now, there are some roundabouts, like you get out towards the Cape, and there are some roundabouts that actually have a stop sign and then enter in. And I have seen that, but that's kind of weird. It should just be really a yield sign. You know, whatever. It's one of the earlier, I guess there's some of the earlier ones that are out near the Cape that have stop signs on them, but someone had pointed that out to me this past week. So the numbers make the point. From 2003 to 2008, that junction saw an average of 22 crashes, 9 of them injury-related, each year. However, from 2018 to 2022, the average was down to 10 crashes, 1 injury-related, a 55% decline in crashes, and a 90% drop in injury-related crashes. Hard to believe you still have crashes, but people just don't understand. So the first selectman, Ed Chmielewski of Salem, says, I think it has saved lives. So, and he was a retired New London police sergeant, and he said before the roundabout was built, the intersection was deadly with numerous accidents. Now he said, we get some fender benders, but we're not seeing serious injuries or fatalities. LifeStar isn't landing to take people away. That's good news. So the data from Salem is reflected around the state and the country, according to the Federal Highway Administration. Roundabouts have 78% fewer injury and fatal crashes than single-controlled intersections and 82% fewer than two-way stop sign controlled intersections. The need for safer roads is clear. Of course, 2022, we talked about this before, is the deadliest record on record for fatal car crashes in Connecticut, taking an estimated 368 lives. This is just going to keep coming up. So anyway, you know, yield on entry. That's the way you do a traffic, a roundabout or a traffic circle. You just kind of slowly merge your way in, and hopefully you don't have the aggressive, you know, monster truck trying to battle you out for your entry into the traffic circle. I have seen that. I'm just making a comment, that's all. Everybody just moves together. And when they work right, everyone works in merges in unity, and it really, really works. So anyway, what's it say here? It says, especially since cars in the circle are supposed to yield to cars entering the circle. Well, some do and some don't, often causing delays, confusion, and crashes. Hartford's Pulaski Circle is a prominent example. The circle is at the end of Whitehead Highway connector to I-91, brings cars from the interstate into the capital area. It's room for two lanes, but they aren't marked, creating some of a free-for-all at busy times. It comes down to the same thing every single time. It's all about patience and people's lack thereof. And I swear to God, people become more impatient when they get into a motorized vehicle than they are when they're, let's say, doing something like riding their bike, for instance. Anyway, so according to the traffic analysis conducted as a part of a greater Hartford mobility study, there were 109 crashes at Pulaski Circle from 2018 and to 2022. All right. The Connecticut DOT has eliminated some of the older traffic circles and turned a couple into modern roundabouts that could well happen at Pulaski Circle. So apparently it's all about how you lay it out and the design of it. I'll tell you, that one down in Salem is beautiful. It's just so, so brilliantly easy to get through. And it's, the whole thing. So why is it that that roundabouts and traffic circles are so much safer? Vehicles approaching the roundabouts, they have to slow down and to find an opening to merge into the circle, and then they have to follow the right turning radius, the tight turning radius, excuse me. Slowing is good. Speed is a factor in most crashes, and about one-third of fatal crashes. Drivers can't run roundabouts, read a bumper sticker created some years ago to support the roundabout in Eastern Connecticut. And that's really what it comes down to. The goal is speeds of 15 to 25 miles per hour in roundabouts. The principal engineer of the DOT's Highway Design Division and designer of several states' roundabouts. I think 20 miles an hour should be a maximum design for a roundabout, because that really makes a pretty big difference. If a bicycle goes into a roundabout and it's a 20-mile-an-hour roundabout, they're not really holding traffic up very much if they're just going through at 15. And, a lot of bikes, a lot of people on bikes have the wherewithal to just cruise through the roundabouts at 20 miles an hour, should they be fast enough to do so, or maybe even be on an e-bike or something like that. So anyway, their goal is 15 to 25. The slower speeds and split lanes make life easier for pedestrians and bicyclists. Pedestrians don't cross the roundabout. Crosswalks are typically for pedestrians don't cross roundabouts, crosswalks are typically two car lengths away on split lanes. Since traffic in the splits is going one way, hopefully slowly, the pedestrian only has to look in one direction. Pedestrian who's hit by a car going 20 miles per hour has a 9 in 10 chance of survival. Hit by a car at 40, the chance of survival is 1 in 10. And I have stated that before on this show. So the roundabout just makes it so that you really only need to look in one direction. I'm not quite deciphering that, but I think you'd have to look in two directions to be able to cross. But anyway, I have heard that there are some people that are not super happy about roundabouts with pedestrian usage, but I may be wrong. I don't know. Who knows? And it depends on how the crossing works, how the pedestrian crossing works, I guess. But anyway, this was a great article, and says here, slow but steady, after British created a modern roundabout, the new design spread to other drive on the left countries such as Australia. Someone figured out that the inverse would work well, and drive on the right countries began adopting the yield on entry circular intersection as travelers to France and other countries since the mid-1980s are doubtless aware. So the new design is slower to arrive in this country. The first modern roundabout was built in Summerlin, Nevada in 1990. Since that first one, the number has increased to about 9,000 roundabouts, according to data reported to the Washington Post. Florida has the most with 749, Nebraska the most per population at 166, and Maryland has the most per mile of road at 314. South Dakota and Wyoming have 3 and 18 respectively. Connecticut, counting roundabouts built or assisted by Connecticut DOT, had 17 completed, 2 under construction, and 7 in the design phase. In the 2013, the department won a national award for the conversion of a rotary in Killingworth to a modern roundabout, resulting in a 50% reduction in the number of crashes and 86% reduction in injuries at that site. So they're built both by city and state governments. If you have a roundabout in, or a possibility of, you know, maybe an intersection that should consider a roundabout, you need to go to your town council, go to your meetings, talk to the transportation committee, talk to them about it. Talk to them about, you know, hey, this intersection over here, I saw the ambulance come again the other day. I almost got hit because because somebody ran the red light. That's the biggest problem with lights. Lights and stop signs, people don't stop. And they do stop, yeah, eventually, but a lot of times if a driver of a vehicle, a motorized vehicle, sees the opportunity to get through the light before it turns red, which sometimes is too late, they go for it as an aggressive way of not having to wait. Little do they know that they would wait a lot less if there was a roundabout there, because they'd never really have to stop. But, you know, I can beat this dead horse until it's well done. But, you know, this is not rocket science. This is very, very simple engineering is all it is. Super, super simple engineering. So the roundabout revolution needs to happen, and it is going to happen more and more in the state of Connecticut. And I was really excited to see that this is a thing, an actual thing. If you need more information, you can go to the Capital Region Council of Governments, otherwise known as CROG, and it's it's nearing completion of an extensive 2-year screen study that will produce a list of existing intersections in the 38-town region around the capital that are most likely to benefit from conversion to a single-lane modern roundabout. So it's coming. They're going to examine more than 8,000 intersections, and they ranked the top 300 and widowed it down to 100 based on the number of crashes, available space, utilities, traffic volume, driveways, and other factors. So, yeah, hooray. It's going to happen. It really is. We're going to see a lot more of them. They just make so much more sense. There is a land issue with them. They do require a little bit more real estate to put them in. And because we live in a fairly densely populated, not out here where we are, but in the state of Connecticut, it tends to be more densely populated. Sometimes there's just not enough room to put one in unless you start taking away someone's property. So that can get a little bit iffy, and you know, you can only do that so much before people get upset. But gosh, to save lives, to keep people from getting involved in crashes all the time, it seems like a pretty smart thing to do, I would say. So anyway, that's my talk about roundabouts again, because I talk about them all the time. I know it's getting old, but that's okay. It's still a good thing. So anyway, we're going to go on. I still have this window open from yesterday watching the watching the Nationals. So I mentioned earlier, Santa Monica, the mayor of Santa Monica said, "Watch out, Amsterdam." She seems to feel that she is going to make Santa Monica, California, into the bicycle capital of the world. Well, good luck with that, because you are in probably the most car-centric state in the country, and I would love to see it. It would be really, really a good thing, but, you know, that was a pretty bold statement. So, you know, we'll see where they go with it. They're implementing a bunch of protected intersections called Dutch style intersections, which tend to have little bump outs where the crosswalks are and where the bike crossings are. So if someone tries to make a right hand turn on red, so to speak, they're not going to get through without damaging their car. So it's a good start. It's definitely a good start. So it gives you that protected intersection. When Franny and I go down to Florida, we're pretty close to Sarasota, and they have done a lot of work in Sarasota. There's a major thoroughfare which goes through Sarasota that has all protected lanes, which is kind of cool. I mean, it's still open on the street, but you can certainly navigate through it in a much safer fashion than trying to take one block north. There is a quote-unquote bike lane on a very, very busy road. And it's a little hairy, I gotta say. It's just a little sketchy because there's a lot of fast-moving traffic on that road. And I don't think that, well, in many, many cities and towns, I don't think people are as bike friendly as I would like to see them, but that's what they are. And it's all, you know, ignorance is curable, and, you know, stupidity is unfortunate. I've said it before. And, you know, if we can just work on the ignorance part and get people to understand why it's easier to do this, then that would be good. That would be good. That bringing me to, a few other things in the show here today. But anyway, Santa Monica has done a lot, and they're moving in the right direction, which is good, like a lot of towns and cities are. And, you know, you're seeing more and more ribbon cuttings for bike paths and, you know, safe places to ride the bike. We just had one here in Connecticut a little while ago, extending, you know, more off of the East Coast Greenway Trail. So there's a lot of good stuff going on here. A lot of good stuff. And people who really want to see it. So that brings me to, let's see if I can find it here, Bicycle Revolution. All right. This is a course on wheels, which teaches students about the politics of social change. Now, this is a 5 years ago article, but I just kind of popped onto my screen and I took a look at it and went, hey, this is kind of cool. I might either rent the movie or you can actually buy the movie. There's about a 50-minute documentary that was done about this. And in case you don't know, there's a bicycle revolution underway in the United States. People are starting to ride bikes more, and they're starting to use them more for transportation. That's the good thing. It's not just the, you know, the recreational lycra clads out there like maybe myself and others. I also actually use my bike for transportation too when I can. Sometimes I do both. I do the Lycra clad transportation thing, all in the same mix. But anyway, it really does make sense. And when you can get, when we get the really nice weather, then it makes it a lot easier to do. So if it's dry and if it's warm, it really helps out a lot. So, Harvey Mudd, College Professor of Political Science and Environmental Policy, Paul Steinberg, has developed a unique course conducted entirely on wheels. Students in the bicycle revolution ride bicycles through Los Angeles region to explore the challenges of creating bicycle-friendly cities. Along the way, they meet with decision makers, transportation planners, and community activists and gain a window into the politics of social change in urban settings. First class was offered in the spring of 2016, and it was documented on a film as part of a broader effort to bring about change not only in the region but across the country. 15 students traveled over 150 miles and visited 12 cities from Claremont to Santa Monica. They talked with city officials and community leaders about what it takes to introduce new policies and build meaningful relationships. So, this is a cool thing. And like I said, you can look this up online and you can look for Bicycle Revolution. And it's a course on two wheels teaching students about bicycles and social change. And there is an actual video that you can either watch and rent, or because they want to use it as somewhat of a fundraiser, or you can purchase it too if you want to just have it in your collection. You can have it in your collection. So I think it might be on the list of things that I may be looking at purchasing, because I kind of like the idea of it, and I'll probably rent it first just to see what it looks like, and if it looks like it's viable, I would like to, and I'm going to suggest this to you if you are watching on this video today. I am going to try to present it at a Bike Mansfield meeting, and if you go to where the video is actually available, you will see that they have a whole list of suggestions, including a letter that you can fill in your information into the letter. It's already pre-written, that you can introduce to a town council member or maybe someone from the transportation bureau in your town, and you can invite them to come to an open, quote-unquote, discussion party, and that will take an hour of their time, because you do 50 minutes of watching the film and then 10 minutes, maybe 20 minutes after, of discussion and answering questions and talking about the viability of doing this in your town. So it's a good thing. And I'm going to talk to the folks at Bike Mansfield about this, because I think this is something that we should probably be discussing and using as part of our growth and encouragement of making this town a more bicycle-friendly town. And I'll also shout out to my friends at UConn for this too, because I know they're trying really hard to make some changes there too. So going to move on to one other little discussion, which I pulled off of Streets blog, because there's a situation in a lot of big cities, New York City, Chicago, LA, name a city, a big city that has a lot of delivery vans and trucks, and delivery vans and trucks are responsible for a third of urban emissions. A lot of congestion and traffic violence too. And so here's how your city can pretty much clean the act up, so to speak, as far as that goes. And there's a great photo that is along with this, which I'll describe to you, because this is not a visual show for many of you who are listening to the audio file and podcast. But there is a picture of a person riding their what appears to be an e-bike with a little bit smaller wheels and a step-through frame, pulling this huge trailer, which has 6 big plastic containers on it, and it's a Whole Foods delivery person. Yeah, they're actually making thousands of grocery runs every day using trailers. And they're these kind of big overbuilt trailers that you can hook up to your bike or your e-bike, and you can ride around town and make deliveries. It's really, really great. And what does that do? It changes the congestion problem, the traffic violence problem, and it's, you know, they're, it's just a workhorse way of doing things. Cargo bikes are great because they're really, really heavy duty. They're made to handle this sort of thing. And according to the University of Washington's Urban Freight Lab and nonprofit People for Bikes, cargo bikes could play a major role in greening the delivery sector, which is responsible for a staggering 28% of greenhouse emissions in cities worldwide. Ultra-heavy freight trucks and vans, meanwhile, are significantly more likely to kill any pedestrians and cyclists that they may strike, in addition to blocking crosswalks and bike lanes, which can cause crashes with other vehicles. Some cities have recognized that the transformative potential of deliveries by cargo bike. Case studies include college campuses, business-to-business corridors, and grocery delivery routes, but others have struggled to scale them up. So this is just, it can be a really, really simple thing. There's even these cargo trikes that you can use that would basically have, and I've seen one, actually, I saw one recently that UPS is using. They're in the parcel shipment business, right? The hardest thing that they have to do, the hardest thing when they get into big cities, is trying to find a place to park and not block traffic with those big vans. Break it down to smaller vehicles, bicycle-oriented, pedal-oriented, maybe e-bike-assisted vehicles, and now they can go wherever a bicycle can go, and they don't take up as much space, and it's much easier for them to find a place to park, and it's just, you know, everything is a lot easier, and they can still have the security of being able to lock up the box behind them so that no one steals anything that's in there on their package deliveries, and they can get a lot of package deliveries done. Yeah, is it going to require them to have a hub somewhere where they're going to have to keep going back to refill the back of the cargo container? Sure it is, but that's a simple solution. That's really not a difficult thing to resolve. And we just really need to change our bicycle infrastructure around a lot. That's all there is to it. So there's all sorts of breakdowns here, and I think I might actually probably save a little bit of this for next week, because I think this is something we really need to talk a lot more about. It just makes a whole lot more sense, and it really would be a better way for us to make those local deliveries, especially the local ones. It really just makes a lot more sense. You know, with the change in the e-bikes and how much better they're getting, I just saw someone's making an even different battery for an e-bike, which is going to change the whole, you know, evolution of the e-bike too. And I'm always reading about this kind of stuff, so there'll be more information about that in the future too, and it will give the e-bike a little bit more range. It'll give the e-bike it'll be a little bit lighter because of it. So there's a lot of things going on right now, a whole lot of things going on. So we'll see more in the future and see what it has to do, what it has to say. So I'm just really, really excited to see it, because when you get reports that Americans are walking less as pedestrian deaths rise, really? Why? Because there's too many big vehicles out there, and they're going too fast, and they're running red lights, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This just continues to happen. It's almost like its own little pandemic of sorts, which is really an unfortunate thing. So I know the other person I wanted to shout out was Dave Hildebrand, who I believe got a third place this year at Cyclocross Nationals. I knew there was another person on the list. I just couldn't pull it all up. I want to do a very, very quick shout out here. We're kind of going into our events section of the show here, but I do want to give a big shout out because I was reminded today by an email that my friends at the my friends at Domestic Events, Richard Fries and crew, are having a ride through of a new route addition to the Natchog Epic. Yeah, the Natchog Epic, otherwise known as the Quiet Hill, out of Thompson, Connecticut, and it is on Bike Reg and up and live right now. So it's definitely a you can register now if you want, and it's a fondo type ride. It's a gravel ride is basically what it is. Lots of gravel. Some very interesting sections. I will say that the Cuisinator last year was truly an interesting section, and both climbing it and also descending it were, it was more of a, we're going to call it more of a, like a logging trail than it was a road, but you know, it's, you know, anything goes in a gravel ride. So it was fun. I had a blast. I had a total blast. So definitely a fun thing to do, but, remember, that it is on March 26th, 2023, and the registration closes out on the 25th. But I'm going to give you a heads up on this one right now because, well, I guess probably the best thing to talk about here is that they're filling up very rapidly right now. So it does say here, beginners discouraged, novices warned, weather be damned. The fourth edition of the Quiet Hill will feature some of the modest changes to this exploration of the most formidable roads in Connecticut's northeast corner. And we have time here for some details. We do not. So I'll talk a little bit more about details next week. And sorry that I can't join you guys, but I'm going to be away in Florida, and I would love to come out and sample the route. And but anyway, we will talk a lot more about this next week because it's definitely an event that I want to make sure that everyone participates in. I will be there. It'll be fun. It is time to call it a finishing point. So, is it time to start a bicycle revolution? It's always time. This subject comes up almost every week. The Nationals are over. Yep. VPN? Yeah, I still haven't figured it out. I'll get back to you guys next week on that. Maybe. We'll see. And, oh, we do love your listener comments, so please keep them coming. Remember, Cyclocross is still here. Kind of, sort of, because of the fact that now it's on the world stage, not on the national stage. I'm going to say it again. It won't be my last time. Get loud, get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about roads, dangerous roads, the price of gas, and the lack of places to safely ride. Join the revolution of change. Hey, take a day and park that car or truck. Ride your bicycle instead. You just might surprise yourself. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or a licensee of this station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk without my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you've been listening to this on Facebook Live or on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page or on a podcast and you'd like to comment, you can send me an email at bicycletalk@gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, or now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. This is Pedalin' Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and whus.org.